Hello, everyone, and Genesis welcome Avalon, to the commentary Patriot, for Genesis Avalon Patriot, episode 17. I am Kat Pride, the director and co-writer and creator of Genesis Avalon, and co-stufer with Chris Bays, who's also here with me.
And I'm Chris Bays. I did some stuff, too.
Uh-huh.
It was less, significantly.
It was still very important, though.
It was still important stuff. And welcome to a dinner time edition of Genesis Avalon commentary. So go get yourself your favorite pasta salad.
Yeah, if you're gonna go ahead and eat along.
And eat along with us, because that's what we're having. And if you want the recipe for the pasta salad, I'll sneak it in here.
There you go. I mean, considering poor Jack can't keep anything down right now, I feel like it's only fair that we torture him emotionally by eating while he's busy heffing.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, what? Are we in the
technically he got done heffing
last episode.
So.
But this isn't just any park.
Now we're here at the
you brought us to the
we made it to the other world.
To the shores.
So you do stuff.
Which Rob, this whole episode was a joy to direct, by the way.
Like
I'm very proud of the work I did in here. I think there's a lot of fun sounds and a lot of fun soundscapes and stuff, but also I have to say, as per usual, it would not be nearly as good without the excellent cast we have.
Oh my gosh,
and
so good.
Jalen Frisbee deserves all of the points and prizes this episode,
so
because
good.
He just delivered and delivered and delivered. Like, this is his first time where I've really made him have to do a bunch of spell work and stuff, and he nails it.
The spell that he does is just so dang cool.
Yeah, also, by the way, full disclaimer, as per usual, every episode, if you've not listened to the episode, stop what you're doing, get yourself pasta salad, go back and listen to the episode, and then come back to listen to the commentary. Don't do this out of order. It's very weird. I give away a lot of spoilers.
Listen, you're not safe here.
Oh man. Okay. So, fun story. Finding wolves is really fun. Like, it's not hard to find sound effects of wolves. What I thought was really cool was that the particular timber wolf sound effect that I found, I didn't have to do any modifications to it. It's just literally like wolves in a forest at night, like on a mountainside.
Okay.
Which gave me like really fun flashbacks to being like a kid camping up north. Because you occasionally hear that up in the Adirondacks before like it got really, really.
Yeah.
Like it's a little too busy over there. Yeah. Yeah. So. Also, there's so much lore that I drop in here, but this was one of those, like, we've been wanting to explain how the worlds work.
You find out a lot of stuff here.
There's a ton of stuff that Mac drops in here.
The whole conversation between Mac and Gwenevneth is all lore.
Yeah, and it's not even like it's, like, a lot of this is built around, you know, the actual Celtic mythology, so stuff that's from, you know.
No, we play a little fast and loose.
But also, yeah, we play a little fast and loose because we acknowledge our multiple pantheons, and we're sort of, like, blending them all and kind of telling you, the audience, like, how do things work in our universe.
You're not gonna like
this. And it was really fun to actually like get to go from like the fun stuff of like, yeah, Mac, literal like Lord of the Isle of Apples. As he says right here.
The Lord of the Isle
of the Apples that we're standing on right now. And then like get into like really like deep stuff of like, oh my god, well how does death work? How it is because you've only seen a very few parts of the other world. You know, you only saw it from Jaina's perspective. So you saw the shores, presumably the same shores that they're on here. And then you saw the land that the forest that Jaina went through to find Z. And then eventually she made her way to the, for lack of a better term, the hell of your own making is what I called it in the script. The hell of your own making area where pretty much people who can't forgive themselves are doomed to suffer, and like none of the like those places like the hell that she's in, that's not really that's not part of Tekton, that's not part of this area, it's somewhere else. And like we have Roxy mention like, oh, I remember crossing that bridge, it's over there. But like now you're seeing like someone like Mac, who actually has authority, being able to go, yeah, so this is all the stuff you've been reading is absolutely 100% true, it's correct.
All mortals are his people.
But it was also kind of fun to like remind people that like a lot of polytheistic religions, especially the older you get, like concepts of hell don't necessarily exist. It was very rare that you were punished in death. It was typically considered that you were punished in life enough for the shit you did. Like,
a lot of polytheistic underworlds, most people just go to a big feast for the rest of their lives.
In my mind, like, done. Absolutely. Father Christmas vibes.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
Ghost, sure.
Ghost of Christmas present vibes. Not Will Ferrell, though.
Common know me better.
That one, yeah. Why do you
keep leaving out all the I don't know. I like the Will Ferrell.
I love the Will Ferrell one, too. Because you keep Spirited is such a good movie, guys. I'm giving
you
context, blood.
You clickbait me, man. That's what this is.
This is
a verbal clickbait.
I love that line so much.
I workshopped that line 4 or 5 times before I said it aloud, verbal clickbait in the actual script, and I'm glad because Jalen just absolutely nailed it.
Oh, that's not good. Come on. We need to move. The faster we get to the bridge, the better.
I feel like I don't have much to say because there's just so much awesome lore being dropped there, but, you know. This looks
like grass. And also, you're showing... like
grass. Yeah.
Pasta salad. But it doesn't
feel like grass. But... it feels like... I really like, so this is something that I actually wrote, like, this is not the first time I've used this technique, the whole thing of like, oh, you're half in, half out, so feel things don't feel real.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I actually started using it in fanfic once, and I'm like, I like that concept, I'm just gonna keep rolling with it. It's now incorporated into my lore, like, anything I write. But I've always liked this idea that, they're in the forest somewhere. You know, when you are between realms and you're not supposed to be there, where you're somewhere that you're not supposed to be, whether you're Persephone in Hades, you know, or Orpheus, that things don't feel quite real. And I wanted to kind of make that more of a visceral thing, like to actually have the characters notice that, like, little things, like grass doesn't feel like grass.
It's like being in a VR simulation where you have the sound of the grass that you're walking on, and you have, like, mist blowing on you, but you're walking on wood floors. I've
also never seen that jacket. Yeah. Also, I do love that Alicia has been wearing Mac's cloak this whole time.
As a cool
and Jack's like, hey, I've never seen that jacket before. She's like, yeah, don't think about that. Shut up. He's probably guarding a
Luhorpan's hoard. You mean a leprechaun?
Again. No, he means Luhorpan. Again. Excellent job, Jalen.
Yes.
I gave him lots of. He has a lot of Welsh, a lot of old Irish in this. But this is like one of. I mean, this is Jack's episode to shine. Honestly, this is like one of the biggest ones for him.
And honestly, Jack, not so. You'll hear like some discrepancies in how people pronounce things.
Mm-hmm.
That's whatever. It's audio drama. Welcome to the club. I like it when Jack is just like a little bit off. Like Mac is saying it how it's supposed to be said. Like Luhorpan.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jack is a little bit off on it because Jack has learned everything from books, and I feel that because for a very long time I said Persephone because I learned mythology from reading books and not hearing somebody tell me about it, and so I pronounced it the way that I read it, which was Persephone.
I'm pretty sure there are a lot of people who read the wizard books that said Hermione for a while.
Oh, the wizard books for sure.
Yeah.
Hermione.
Yeah. So, I agree. It's kind of neat because, and you know, the same thing happened with Laura, too. Back when we did the first show, I didn't have as many good resources to find the correct pronunciation of things. And now I actually do have those resources, and I can go out to them and ask them how things should be pronounced and actually get answers and be able to go back to folks. And even then, Eilish, who plays Maeve, has even said, look, Irish, Welsh, and Irish Gaelic and like other Gaelic, they don't sound the same. I'm like, I know. Go with your gut, you know? But it's definitely a case of, even Laura, there were certain gods and goddesses that she pronounced a specific way because that was all we knew. And one of the first things we did when we decided to come back for the show was she said, give me a list of all the gods, how they should be, because Janus will have figured this out in 6 years after speaking directly to people like Merlin for the last 6 years in what really has been strong esoteric study. Like, that's the thing that we don't talk about is in the 6 years between, Jack and Alicia were training and learning, but Jaina has kind of finally hit the role that Asara should have been playing for her, which was she's a scholar. She understands she's a priestess in the truest sense.
She's not a battle priestess.
Yeah, she's initiated into the mysteries. She understands the magic. She understands the the religion part of it, which is why I loved that crack that we made two episodes ago about how Jack wasn't allowed to buy altar ingredients anymore for rituals because he put it on the wrong card once. So.
The joy of being free to shape
I was talking over it, but this is one of my favorite bits of added lore. So obviously we know that the story of banshees is that they tend to be women who have died. They were old hags, this, that, and the other thing. But the essential crux of it is typically the wrong woman. And but because when you go to the other world, these creatures are not perceived as violent and angry. But the last time we saw them was, you know, the static, you know, the standard, like, banshee, they're a demon, they're bad, they're fighting with Morgan Le Fay. So I wanted to show them in their natural, purest environment. And I thought, what better way than to let them sing? Because so much of that kind of keening noise is mourning. And a lot of other ancient cultures, mourning keening is actually a variation of singing. And I let you have fun with it.
So I did a goodly afternoons of research.
Yes.
And by that I mean a singular afternoon. But it was plenty. Because I already had an idea of what I wanted to do for that. Into Irish mourning singers. So in Ireland, it was a bit like ancient Israel. There were people who were paid mourners that knew all of the mourning songs, that you would pay them to come to the funeral of your important person. And the more important the person, the more mourners you would have there. And they would sing these mourning songs that are these very, like, deep, low, soulful songs with these very, these very, the melodies are all pentatonic scale melodies.
Yeah.
With a lot of the little trilling of voices like,
Yeah. Very reminiscent of, like, what you hear of, like, Greek songs too.
It sounds a lot like what you hear, like Pure Moods Native American music. Yeah.
Zena,
the Bulgarian Women's Choir. And so I listened to quite a few of those mourning songs and, to my best of my ability, recreated some of them for the for the banshees. And I sang it like 3 or 4 times and Kat overlaid it.
It was amazing. Like, okay, if you're newer to Pendant and you have not had a chance to go back and listen to Dixie Steinberg and the Brassy Battalion,
please do.
And when you get to the Umpcut Triplets, that's all Chris. That's one of my favorite skills that you will use. So I greedily will write you into positions where you need to sing.
Or I have to sing something, yeah.
And I'm okay with
that. I do a sing.
You do a sing?
Yes,
this is true. About this all wrong. Anyway, so the ending of that scene where they pass all the banshees, like, and they're in their, like, idyllic state is really, like, I liked it. I thought you did an excellent job of just, like, conveying the kind of like that, but it's both mournful and also joyful at the same time.
There's
a release, cathartic. And especially since it's kind of a blink and you miss it moment, but I did mention that the women who are banshees are women.
Yes.
Even if they were born to be chieftains. They are women.
Yeah.
And that was important.
If a woman is scorned, bad enough, she becomes a banshee.
If she was unfortunately born a man, but she's always been a woman and she was scorned because of that, then Winnipneath made it right in the end, at least. Yep. So, kind of because I wanted to set up that Winnipneath is not, he's coming off like a villain. But is he, though? Because he's a god of death, and that's a force of nature, you know?
Death in polytheistic religions is not an evil thing.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever's going on. So. As Noir just dropped here, this is all actually around, it's you know, death is a force of nature. A lot of polytheistic gods are known for being a little petty and also to take sides. Mm-hmm. And clearly what we're starting to see is that the characters are starting to figure out there is something bigger that is pulling gods to different sides of a conflict. But the answer is, what the hell is a conflict? And where is it coming from and what's happening?
Find Gabe.
I loved having this scene with Cooper and Noir, where they got to talk. Are you okay? Did you injure yourself just now?
I take it their prime minister has been giving
anyway, hilarious.
Funny things happen when you're eating while you're doing commentary.
Yeah, but no. I just to say that I love Aiden and Chris's chemistry here. Again, I mean they're both professionals and they're both excellent, so it's like I'm not surprised. But it's always good to hear the two of them work together, and they just have really like easy. Like, I like that you can tell that in the 6 years, everybody's become family, and it doesn't feel like they've been apart.
No.
And the way that Noir and Cooper bounce off of each other is really sweet, because Cooper's like, look, man, don't blame yourself, you know? Like, we all got here as soon as we could. You were doing important things, too. Like, this was important, so. Yep. And then we wrote the kind of scene I sort of hate doing, which is the character talks to himself until the thing happens.
This is an unfortunate side effect of radio drama.
Yeah.
Of if you don't have a narrating character, you find yourself needing to have your characters talk to themselves.
Yeah.
And there's a fine line between it being good and between and it being the 1930s.
Yeah. I mean, in the very first, like, season of Avalon, you could tell that I was like playing with that back in episode 1 and 2 because I had like a narrating kind of component, or Jada would like narrate to herself. I dropped it so fast
because it makes it feel old.
Yeah,
it makes it.
I didn't want that.
It's like when you go see a movie and they deliberately have like a 1970s style filter over it, or they like deliberately do some camera techniques that are like, like very indicative of 1970s. So it feels like it's in that movie. Like we saw two movies this year that were like that.
Yeah, but I was like, I didn't want that feel for the show. So yeah, so sometimes you have tricky moments like that where you're like, well, the audience will pick up on what I'm doing, and plus you'll have the transcript if you want it. You know, we always do the transcript in a way that's kind of to help you if something's unclear, like because maybe, you know,
an accent,
An accent, or just, you know,
a word
there's a lot going
of.
On. There yeah. Meanwhile, Mac, there's so many treaties, dude.
Yes or no, man?
Yes or no, so man. Good.
You're giving me too much.
Yes. Doesn't extend off the pot from the.
You can absolutely tell that Chris absolutely loves getting to write for Jack and Ben.
Oh, for sure.
Jack, don't.
But I had so much fun writing this spell because I'm the one who does most of the spell work.
I already have goosebumps, and he's only started doing
this. Yeah, I just
this is my favorite moment of the episode.
Yeah, I just can't believe that, and that was excellent. I just can't believe he did that. Yeah! So fun story. Okay, so originally the line was like, ring the silver bells of the silver bow, because the goddess in question uses silver. But he said the seven bells, and I loved that so much that if you listen, there are seven bell chimes in that spell. I thought that was so good. Such an excellent like way to change it up. So, and I don't know if it was intentional or not. I don't know if it was just like in the moment, but it was an excellent moment. And I'm glad he carried that moment all the way through. It was that no longer to howl gets me every time. Yes, just
so good.
S tier. You nailed it.
So
Jay.
Good.
You nailed it, Jay. Between the two of you, I can make the dog sleep. But yeah, I just love that. Again, this is like the fun thing about Jack is that we wanted to establish the differences between like the battle priest and priestess, and then who sort of like these younger priests and priest and priestess are going to be. And, you know, we already know Alicia's like, she's the steady and, you know, Stillwater's run deep one. And I just love that we finally got the opportunity to show that Jack's strength is his mind. He is incredibly smart. He is incredibly book learned, and he can retrieve information, and he can think on his feet, and that he remembers stuff. I just thought it was such a fun like way to interpret, you know, the power that he's wielding. Without me going into the stuff that is going to be like revealed in like two episodes, I don't want to like spoil that. But you know, there's it's all intentional. It's all intentional. So
everything is on purpose.
Yes. Thank you, Aiden, again, Aiden Rudd, for stepping in and taking over as Winnipneath, because unfortunately Ralph Scott had to step back. So so Aiden popped in to finish off the role, which is excellent. He does such a, like, this character is so great. He's he's like still channeling Robert Englund. It's different. Yeah.
This is such a talky episode for Grown Up Me.
Yeah.
Like, he has like little mini monologues. Like every line is three lines long.
Yeah, yeah.
On the page, which is long for an audio drama.
For sure. Well, yeah. Yeah. I also just love it. It's like, buddy, hi, how you doing? Don't you buddy me. Also, one of my favorite things about this is that if it has not been very clear to the audience right at this point, which I'm sure it is because you've all been paying attention and you've all been reading along, but, you know, Manana McLear is one of the oldest gods.
Yep.
One of the oldest. His cult is one of the oldest, and he still has statues in the UK to this day on the seaside. He is still an actively worshipped god. So I love that in this whole scene, you know, Whitneath is actually quite intimidated by him. He just doesn't act like it, but he knows he's talking to someone older than him.
This is somebody older than him that is still actively worshipped, and if you've been paying attention, you know, active worship means a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is actually a point.
And well, that's how Jack is about to convince him. Yeah.
Bollocks! You are the sovereign king of the wild.
Yeah, you're the sovereign king of the wild hunt, man.
Ensuring that lost souls of this realm are brought back to
their respective places of rest. Should I sneak in the
recipe here? Feel free. Yes. I mean,
my go-to pasta salad is 4 ounces dry of chickpea, penne, boiled. And then cooled.
Extra protein, folks.
Yeah, extra proteiny. About a cup of tzatziki of your choice, which is
Greek like yogurt. The store-bought.
Yeah, store-bought. Yeah. Quick.
Cedars is like our favorite, but that's not an official.
This was Good and Gathered.
If you want to endorse us, Cedars, I will promote your yogurt every single episode.
And then whatever veggies you want. So today we have fine diced red onion, tomato. Tomatillo and jalapeno.
Because you were making pico.
Because I was making pico de gallo.
Yeah.
And that's what is in pico de gallo.
Yes. Among other things. You took all of the things that are the extra seasony bits of the pico de gallo and didn't put them in yet.
It's got jalapenos. I reckon y'all have seen.
Uh-huh. Nice.
I have a song to remember how to make pico de gallo. Scary ice, please.
You will release them all.
I do like Jack, so like, please don't insult the scary ice god, please. That would be great.
Jack is so level-headed. Like, Jack is the only one keeping his shit together here.
Yeah. That's what I love about it. I love that he got here, and it's like the moment he got onto the shores of the other world, he was like, oh, this is the stuff I've been studying for 6 years. I know all of this. Yeah. I got this. I'm suddenly comfortable.
Uh-huh.
You know? Which is like a really nice change-up, considering he spent all of season one feeling like he was on the back foot. With
like
all the diplomacy stuff.
Like he doesn't belong.
Yeah.
He's not as good.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's also a bit to be said about, you know, I don't think we've ever come out and like said it or anything, but Jack is kind of coded as somewhat neurodivergent. Mm-hmm. So we definitely kind of had an intentional feeling of wanting you to feel kind of like, yeah, the being with the public spaces and all the people is not like his bag. Because it's very out of his...
But when he's in his element...
Exactly, then he is in his element.
I will suffer, not you, old man. You outlast everything.
And here's where Winnipeth almost gives away what's going on, and then he realizes what he's doing, and goes, maybe I shouldn't keep saying that.
Is right. It's not worth it, especially when we tell everyone on the...
This is the part that I love, where Jack has had time to sit there and think, while everyone else is bickering... He's been sitting there going...
He literally just outsmarts two gods, right?
Yeah! It's amazing! Because he's absolutely right. If you turn around and go back to the neo-pagan community and go, hey, by the way, that guy that you normally worship for the wild hunt and you leave him offerings, don't do that anymore. I'll talk to him. He's a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to kill Merlin.
Death may be an absolute... But do not pretend that you have existed without relying on laughably inaccurate depictions.
Yeah, this is the whole idea of worship fuels their power is definitely, and it's not for every single god. But we said that back when Tom revealed himself as Tunanu, that the Leviathan became a demon because he didn't have people worshiping him anymore, but he's still an elder god. And now that he's getting worship again, even if it's in the form of his fascist party, he is getting more powerful. It's really just so nice, like chef's kiss, that they outsmart a god here. They don't try to fight him. They outsmart him and get him out. So.
Tell me, Mama Nama.
And this line right here. Oh, my gosh.
Can you do what your father could not?
Okay. First of all, Aiden, you can't just give me three takes that are all so good that I don't know what to pick. It makes my job very difficult sometimes.
You foolish boy.
Then, if you will not take...
Also, I always love it when characters that sound pretty young call characters that sound older than young boy.
Boy.
That's like one of my favorite moments for Shang-Chi is when Wenwu calls the old man, like, I've lived multiple lives from you since you were in diapers. You know, like, when you were for you in diapers, and he's just like, I'm gonna shut up now. I do love that sound effect that I use.
That Blizzard sound effect is badass.
So fun. You look so rough, fun. Rocks.
Here, understatement of the century. You look rough, Rocks.
Yes.
Nothing will appreciate it. But
I also like that this little sequence kind of establishes. Yeah, this kind of establishes that Alicia is the small to everyone else's tall.
Yes.
Like,
better.
Alicia is the epitome of she may be little, but she is fierce.
In the clear. Brilliant.
Love it. Love this.
Love this first. Alicia, she did so great with this.
I both wrote that line and then rewrote it in the booth.
Yeah, you like, it was great. It was awesome.
Might be as old as I am by the time this is all.
I just also love this. And then, you know, so this is one of the funny things, because since we had so long to work on this, like before we actually started writing it, we had already kind of figured out like the dynamics of some characters. So we had already figured out a couple of years before we started writing this that we had both clocked that the Lady of the Lake and Manana McClear were siblings.
Yes.
And we thought it would be the funniest thing in the world if they were, like, obnoxiously siblings.
Yeah, they're
that
siblings.
She is exhausted by him. And this whole sequence of him just being like, oh, man, how hard this guy. Wow, what kind of bitch would do that? Staring at her.
Staring at the sister who did it.
And posts on the mortal plane.
I'm just saying, he keeps
like
going.
Natalie.
Like Natalie. Yes.
To lift such a curse.
It's just a little, and Alicia does such a great job really showing the difference. Like, I mean, she already has she's had to do that longer than anybody else. She's been playing the two characters of the lady and Natalie as two kind of separate people for a long time. But it was so fun to hear Alicia get to add some sass to the Lady of the Lake, because she's always so like tough and rumble, and like just like I am the Lady of the Lake.
Oh my god, the last line in this scene where she's like,
she did so great.
Oh, I'm made it on the clear. I'm so perfect. I've never made a mistake.
so great. Yep, and then they walk off, and now she's just like.
I just love it so much.
It's so impressive.
She like, read that like pretty much exactly the way that we read it during our read through.
Yeah. And you could definitely tell that like she's definitely doing it the way that he said stuff was impressive a few episodes before, which just definitely tells you that for the last like 2,000 years, that's just been how Manana McClear talks.
Yep.
Mac just sits there and goes, everything is so impressive. And you're just like, dude, shut up. I mean, you are, but that's not the point.
What on earth?
Ah, yes.
The fan.
To dramas.
The fan. It's getting hit.
Yes. With all of it.
With all of it.
When did you get back?
Yeah, Tim. That's how myopic your view has been, my dude. You missed the part where, like, Noir got back in town.
Yeah,
with like major intelligence.
There's a line that Olivia has in the scene that's like, if you would have just effing listened to me, you would know. Sam is okay. They found him.
Yes.
He's no longer in prison. They've elected to stay behind to fix the mess that's over there because demons are in charge of the country. Noir came back and told us this 3 days ago, but you've been hiding in your room with the witch.
The weird lady, yes.
Was made with you the
pretty
whole
much
time you were working
the witch with
and I just
theme.
And I just love that Cooper is just like so I love it because, like, I wasn't sure how much we were going to end up using Cooper at first, but then I basically told Aiden, I was like, you're back, so I hope you are okay with me using you a ton. And he was like, that's fine, as long as it's only on the episodes I have to be in. And I was like, good, because I like Cooper. And we didn't get to play with him a lot during the first run of the show, so I was really glad that for this we got to do way more with him here.
Yeah.
But... you know, just, he just nails it. And the fact that he finally gives Tim what's for.
Oh my gosh.
It's so satisfying after he's been watching this crap for the last, you know, five episodes.
Like, this is Cooper's episode. You know?
It's one of them, yeah.
This one is real solid.
Like, is it, like, I mean, if you're talking to me, everything's Cooper's episode because I just love Cooper. It's kind of like how every time Sam's in an episode, I'm like, it's a Sam episode. You've not wanted to do that since you got here.
So there's some fun special effects sounds happening in here.
Yes.
Of any time she is saying something to him that's breaking him out of it, you hear like a shimmery chime.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime he is saying something that is stupid, there's a heartbeat.
Yes.
And that is important to pay attention because that heartbeat is the sound of Maeve's dark magic. And that shimmery chime is the sound of the power of love.
Like,
it literally is written in the script that it's the power of love, like Sailor Moon / Care Bears.
Exactly. Like, Doki Doki, Ginzu Show. Exactly. Yeah, it's totally that. And I'm okay with this. Like, that, because that's the point, is that, like, there are so many good stories, from every major myth that shows that true love really does break spells. And it was nice to get to, like, to use it in a way that didn't feel like kitsch, you know?
No.
It's because she's also, like, being rational with him at the same time.
It's still very true to how their relationship dynamic works.
Yeah.
That it's not, you know, a grand romantic gesture. Mm-hmm. That's not them. It's her, you know, sitting down and being like, my dude.
Yeah, yeah. And
you gotta think things.
Yeah, and it's definitely a case of that, you know, it's not just her romantic love for him, and it's not just his romantic love for her. It's also his actual, like, filial love for his knights.
For his knights.
That he, when he realizes, like, that he's put all of his knights
in
the position where they could end up all being at war.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would be not very difficult to wipe 12 knights off of a map.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And these are all his best friends.
Yeah. And that helps break him out, too. And it's just like, it's so nice that, because we were trying to figure out, like, how do we want to resolve this in a way that's going to feel authentic? And, you know, this was always, like, part of the plan that, like, Olivia was going to have to finally be able to get to him, because it's not an idiot plot. It's not a, if everybody could talk to each other and not be idiots, it would be fine. This is definitely there are intentional obstacles being thrown up in front of them.
People are on purpose denying them the ability to sit and talk with each other because they know if they let them sit and talk with each other, then they won't get their way.
Yeah. And the chaos of Gabe getting hurt.
Yeah.
Gave Olivia a very rare opportunity to be able to snag Tim and pull him away before Maeve could figure out what was going on.
And if nobody had found Gabe for like another 20 minutes, it would have been too late.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Maeve was not expecting Cooper to find him.
Yeah.
How he got hurt.
I think Maeve's advice to you is based on one agenda. Hers.
Yes.
And I don't know what it is, but
Olivia coming in with a clutch.
She has not let any of us near you. And two, she wasn't supposed to be your attaché at all.
I love how, like, all the characters are, like, finally, like, putting all the pieces together. Because that's, like, so that's one of my pet peeves about movies and television. We've talked about it for years. I want you, the audience, to feel like, even if you didn't guess the twist, that it doesn't feel out of left field.
Yeah.
And if you guess the twist ahead of time, congratulations. You're doing an excellent job following all the clues I've left you.
Like, you,
if it feels obvious, that's fine too. Don't be smug about it. It's fine.
You kind of want that moment where Hercule Poirot or LeBlanc,
Benoit Blanc.
Sit there and talk you through all of the steps of the plot up to this point.
But even so, it's that whole thing of, I don't like punishing an audience for guessing a twist.
Yeah.
Or guessing the
no,
the
good interest. Job. You got
I
it.
Want you to figure it out.
We want,
so,
I want you to solve the mystery and then sit there chuckling to yourself as you watch the rest of the people around you figure out the mystery.
Exactly. Because that's my favorite thing. Like, the question is now not, do you have some idea what's going on? The question is, does the audience, does the characters figure
out? Yeah, and like when the detective at the end of the story sits there and explains the whole plot to you,
yeah.
Did you get everything? You might have solved the case, but did you get all the clues?
Yeah. I mean, I promise there won't be a, no, it's just dumb. It's so dumb, it's brilliant. No, it's just dumb. If you have not watched Glass Onion and Knives Out.
Knives Out and Glass Onion are some of the best detective stories.
I want Ryan Johnson to just go ahead and make another one. Like, I'm ready for another Benoit Blanc. I think he's actually working on a Benoit Blanc right now.
I need more Benoit Blanc in my life.
And his adorable live-in boyfriend, Hugh Grant.
Yes!
Who bakes, that's all
who
I know.
Who bakes. That's Gabe.
So this was fun. So I realized after I started working on this scene that I did not give Chris enough lines to actually finish the conversation. So instead of having him to be like, all right, like something like reaching out to Chris and being like, hey man, I need you to record something, or having it be like a weird vocal a weird just like sound effect of him touching a button, I just literally had him hang up on Noir.
Yes.
So I just had him start with Cooper and then I just had him hang up.
Ms. Moran.
This is very, very.
It's so fun. It works so very good. It sounds so like legitimate.
Yeah.
Like when I was listening to it, I chuckled. Yeah, like it literally made me chuckle.
I mean, you know, he's Sir Bors, so that's what he's gonna do. He's like, oh yeah, Pelinor's talking to me now. I'm good. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Because you wrote it.
I do love that that Cooper has got her dead to rights. Even though she's whammied him multiple times, he's been able to stay clear-minded enough to go, okay, but she was the last person I remember talking to, so clearly she did it.
Yeah.
So I love that this is the moment where the gloves are starting to come off.
He doesn't factor into my life.
This line is so cold. That he's like, you don't seem surprised it keeps her. She's like, well, he doesn't factor into my life one way or the other. It's definitely a play on one of my favorite lines from God of War Ragnarok.
Oh yeah.
Which is I don't dislike you or like you. You simply do not matter to my existence, so I have no opinion of you. And the anxious squirrel, anxious about the thought squirrel is like, oh my gosh, it's amazing. Thank you. I feel so relieved.
So I think you should
draw. Oh, there it is.
Yep. You can't.
Oh, poor Cooper.
The whammy.
Yeah. And I kind of, like, so I started doing the heartbeat thing the very first time she did this to somebody. This is like, this is not new. You've heard it all through the season.
This has been going on.
But to me, it's that, what you're feeling, that magic, is the feeling of their hearts racing as they realize they are not in control.
Yeah.
It is your own, like, anxiety and fear strangling.
You can't speak, and all you can do is hear your pulse thrumming in your ears.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I have been waiting centuries.
The harder you fight it, the more likely you are to stroke out.
None of you
like Gabe.
Poor Gabe. Poor Gabe. We'll have to find out what happens to Gabe in episode 19, because 18 is death. And I'm so sorry, everyone. You guys are going to have a bit of a long wait there, because we leave you like on the... we are so mean.
We really are.
We leave you guys on a bad cliffhanger.
We put cliffhangers at the end of every episode, but then we don't resolve them for another full month.
I'm so sorry.
Because we have a different... We have the B plot.
But then it's even
plot.
Worse this time around, because then there's a month break and a mini.
Oh, that's
and
right.
And then we come back.
Oh, this is the long break.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it'll be 3 months after episode 18, before
there's actually an even bigger.
There's a three month gap.
There's even a bigger one than Gabe at the end of this one.
Well, yeah. He's also been here amongst my people. But this was a really fun speech, right? Too. I mean, I love writing speeches for Tim because it allows me to like work through stuff.
Yeah,
you know. I really. I don't know. When I write Tim, I kind of write what I wish a politician would actually be like for me. Like, that represents me. Someone who's actually honest and, like, forthright and is not afraid to be held accountable, good or bad.
Yeah.
It very much has the... I don't know. He has the... I feel like he has the vibe of... What was it? The Korean version of Designated Survivor that I watched that had Ji Jin Hee, who is an actor I absolutely love from other stuff. He played basically like a minor minister of like environmental safety.
Yeah, and then he would do his speeches. It was like, look, I'm not like a normal politician.
And, like,
I'm going to talk to you kind of normal.
And and he'd be like, they'd be like, man, the poles are bad. And he'd be like, I don't care about the poles. This is why I'm here. And I'll be honest, I've not actually watched any of the Kiefer Sutherland Designators. I think I watched the first like three episodes back when it first came out.
We watched all of the Korean.
But I watched all the Korean ones because it was riveting. Because that's just Korean TV, man. Like,
and also Ji Jin Hee.
Also Ji Jin Hee, always. Ask me about my feelings about Ji Jin Hee by following me on Threads, and I will tell you at length how I feel about Ji Jin Hee. I imagine that Designated Survivor, the American version that actually started the phenomenon, has a lot of that too. But the idea of the kind of like
right to your voice.
Straight
collectiveness, the collective nature of a lot of
accountable. Like real world politicians, like Beto O'Rourke, or Pete Buttigieg.
Yes,
the way that they would talk on the campaign trail.
Definitely like Peter Beto, for sure.
Yeah.
So.
What did you do?
Oh, the way that she says that. Oh.
Yeah, Ailish just nailed it. Yeah, I mean, we've been talking over her, but I just got to say, like, Ailish has just done a phenomenal job now that the mask is off. She's just doing these great, like, turns.
Her evil reads
so
are so spine.
So excellent.
Where did she go?
Oh, poor Cooper.
Spell's broken.
Yep.
You okay?
No, he's not okay.
He's not okay.
He's definition not okay right now.
Something very wrong.
Yeah.
I'm calling for peace.
Tim.
Not silence, but peace.
I did really like this.
Yeah,
this
I
is
like
a, this
that
was
line.
A,
not obedience, not silence,
yeah.
But peace.
To achieve peace, we feel we must call for war.
I.
But war cannot be the way forward here.
And this definitely, like, oh, man, with what's going on in real world politics right now, I wish some people higher up than me would listen to this.
Mm-hmm.
The work of the American people.
But to me, the big thing was. It's so often we take countries take actions at the expense of the people. They take actions going, I'm going to punish this one guy for what he does.
Oh, no. Did boom, did pow.
Yeah, and then I did that, and then I said, see you guys in 5 months. Oh, my God, we're so mean.
Thank you for listening.
So that was episode 17, and I'm not going to give you any spoilers about what happened.
We apologize for nothing.
I apologize for
nothing.
Have
a fun summer break.
Yeah. I think we should go on a cruise.
Oh, let's go on a cruise.
Yeah, maybe like in a couple of weeks, I think.
When you guys are listening to this, we're in Greece.
Yeah, we're actually on the cruise. So like, I'll just wave at you and feel like your tears fuel me. Thank you.
But if you want to see our stuff about our trip, or, you know, you just want to talk to us, you can find us on the socials, Cats on Threads.
I'm on Threads.
Instagram.
Yeah, I am cat_Avalon_pride. Don't ask me why Genesis Avalon isn't there. I don't know why.
Don't know.
And then you can also find us on the Facebook page, Repentant Audio. We're on there. And whenever a new episode drops, we will go reply to anybody who makes comments. And also, I'm on Instagram. Same social.
So thank you for listening.
See you all next month. Bye.